Good morning, everybody. Who's done the Tongariro crossing? Oh, a few of you. Oh, you'll be able to come and get this message. Hands up again who have done it within the past 5 years. Okay, very good. So, the crossing, as it's known as, is often described as one of the best one-day hikes in New Zealand, and it even ranks among the top 10 single-day hikes in the world. And believe it or not, the Tongariro Crossing sits within the Tongariro National Park. Surprise, surprise, you're right. It's actually New Zealand's oldest park, and it's a dual UNESCO World Heritage Site. It's a place full of cultural significance and dramatic beauty. You've got the volcanic peaks, places like Tongariro, Narahoe, Ruapehu. And so you've got all of this landscape that sometimes when you look at all the different contrasts appears out of this world. Now, those that did the crossing, can you remember the sign that Department of Conservation have put up? And it's a big warning, a strong warning. It says this: although beautiful, the Tongariro Alpine crossing can be dangerous if you are not fully prepared to enter an alpine environment. Extreme weather, terrain and distance have resulted in this track having the highest number of search and rescues for hikers in New Zealand. Those that have done this within the past 5 years, can you remember that sign? Yeah, bit sobering, eh? Anyway, Keisha and I, we decided we'd do the crossing. So we did this end of March. And when I came back from that, I was struck by how many life lessons could be applied from this hike to everyday life, and especially a life in which we are journeying together with Jesus. And so this morning I want to reflect on three lessons from the Tongariro crossing. And one of them is preparation and timing are essential. It's about the journey, not the destination. And third point, that we are not meant to walk alone. So let's deal with the first point, preparation and timing. So the Department of Conservation on their website emphasizes a need for good fitness. So I'd done a few walks beforehand. I should probably have done a bit more, but never mind. Clothing matters too. It was fairly mild at the start and at the end, but at higher altitude, particularly once you come off the top, it was quite cold, it was windy, and at times damp. And so the recommendation was that you have merino layers and a good raincoat. Of course, in any alpine place, weather is a big factor. And so you've got to think about strong winds, about rain, ice or snow. You know, these things can turn a beautiful day walk into something really dangerous. And so when Keisha and I decided we'd do this, we said, okay, let's pick a weekend or two. And we'll take the first weekend that actually has good conditions. And even then, she was going to travel from Tauranga, I was going to travel from Wellington. And we decided, okay, we'll be flexible whether we do the hike on the Saturday or the Sunday. even then, as you start walking up, there's all these signs, there's multiple signs that are saying, stop, consider, what is the weather like right now? What are the conditions of your group? If there is any doubt, turn around now. And this wasn't just one sign. There were multiple signs going up. Now, of course, as part of preparation, we had to think about food and water. There is no water or food or cafes or coffee carts along the trip. You have to take it all yourself. And so I took 2.5 litres of water, took a good amount of food, and actually I didn't use lap water, but if it had been a stinking hot day, I probably would have. Even then, preparation doesn't guarantee success. But I tell you this much, lack of preparation almost guarantees unnecessary risk. So I was thinking, what is the life application to being prepared for the Tongariro crossing? And I thought, you know, we have to prepare carefully for many things in life. We have to think about a partner. We have to think about study. We have to think about work. We prepare for travel, for special occasions. And I thought, do we prepare ourselves with the same care and intentionality for the life that we journey with each other, with Jesus, as much as we do for all of those other life events? Jesus says this, man shall not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God. So we think a lot about, what are we going to eat on a journey like this? How much water do we need to take? I even saw a group of Asians who had taken some hot noodles or something like that. You know, they thought carefully about that. And I thought, and as I sat up there in the cold, I was thinking, oh, I wouldn't have minded some hot noodles or whatever they had. We think, you know, when we're talking about food too, in life we think, some of us think about calories. We think about diet. We think about food groups. But how much thought do we actually give to what we are feeding our mind and our soul? And are we creating space to actually hear from God through reading our scriptures, through prayer, through silence, and not just rushing through a list of requests? When Keisha and I were preparing for the crossing, we were thinking about what clothing do we take? What footwear? Now, I'm not sure if it was Ben who did this tramp in his jandals, so this is my son when he was much younger. But I can tell you, I didn't even bother taking jandals. I wanted to make sure I had the right footwear. And so just as hikers think about what is going to protect my body, am I going to be warm enough? Am I going to be dry enough? Do I have the right footwear? What kind of hat do I need? Do I need a woolen beanie or do I need a peak hat? What do we do? What do we put on to protect our hearts and our minds? What do we put on to protect what we watch, or what we listen to, or the environments that we place ourselves in? What do we do to protect ourselves against the people that we walk closely with? You see, preparation shapes resilience. So point two, what do we got? It's about the journey as well as reaching the end. The destination's important. Reaching the end is important. So you've got to think, how long is this going to take? Now, the website says 7 to 8 hours. I don't think they allowed for breaks. Probably that was walking time only. And yet for us, we took quite a few breaks. We admired the view. We took photos. There were some toilets along the way. Not that I'd recommend them. And we stopped for lunch. And so we took about 8.5 hours. Why? Because we chose to treat this as a marathon, not a sprint. And if we'd focused on solely reaching the end, if we'd focused on just ticking off another World Heritage site, a UNESCO site, we would have missed or not appreciated as much those steaming vents, the old lava flows. What about those lakes? Do you remember those lakes? What colour were they? Green, blue, emerald, beautiful, weren't they? And imagine if you were just hard out to get to the end. Now, there were some people. Now, they were so fit, they were running the jolly thing. I know. So, do you run it? No.
I would love to run it.
Oh, well, yeah. But, you know, we wouldn't miss that. Now, as a dad, I just counted a huge privilege that my daughter not only wanted me to do something when I came to London with her, just the two of us, and we did Belfast together, but she said, Dad, let's do something together again. And this is what we chose. And so for me, part of that was just enjoying the moment of one of my children actually wanting to spend quality time with me. And, you know, that was quite special. And so the joy wasn't just about finishing, but I do have to admit, I was pretty pleased once I'd got to the end. The joy was being present along the way with Keisha. So what is the life lesson for this? Sometimes I think we think of life, and particularly heaven, in terms of the destination. We're going towards something. This is about getting there. In fact, Debbie and I visited a mosque in Dubai, which was very revealing. Now, that's a whole other story. But they talked about the fact that on your shoulder, I think, are some birds or something, and they count all of the good things you've done in life. And on the shoulder, other shoulder, is all the bad things. And when you finally get to the end of your life, they are weighed up. problem is, nobody knows if they've been good enough to actually get to heaven. And I just thank God for the grace of God that gives us the assurance to know that we can have we can continue life with the God who loves us and wants a relationship with us. There's some scriptures that sometimes we overlook. We think we know what they mean. And Jesus says the kingdom of heaven has come near. And we sort of just brush over that. But if you looked at the tense, the kingdom of heaven has. Not the kingdom of heaven will come near. The kingdom of heaven has come here. It's a present day here and now. What about in the Lord's Prayer we say, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And as I thought about this, what Jesus is actually saying is that heaven is not a place we will simply arrive to one day. It's about God's will being lived here and now. And so the Christian life is not just about the destination. It's not just about getting through this life in our earthly bodies. It's about learning to live heaven's values here on this journey, or if you want to call it on this hike. And it's about living out those values in our places of study, in our places of work, amongst our families and friends. It's about how we treat others. And it's how we walk through these ordinary days. And so I pose this question. Are we so focused on the destination that we miss the people and the moments and the invitations that God is putting before us today? The third point I said I was going to share was about preparing for mishaps, the ones you don't expect. So as we were preparing for this, I looked on the website and the big list of things they say you need to take, and thought, what do I need to take here? Well, one of the things they said is there are toilets, but there's no toilet paper. So packed a little bit of toilet paper. Packed a first aid kit. Just a pretty basic one, because remember, whatever you pack, you've got to carry. But nothing prepared me for what was about to happen. Now, for those that had done the crossing, you'll remember that you start off on flat, and a few years ago there was a big fire, and so all of those trees down below are now just charred branches and things. So it's pretty bleak and boring at that point. And when we started off too, we couldn't see the top of Narrahoe because the cloud cover had all come down. But when we finally got through a place called the Devil's Staircase, and I don't know why they called it that, but you know, it's not the easiest part of the track. It's a bit of effort required there. We get up to the top, and we have these beautiful views, and you're so hot at that point that the change in temperature doesn't really matter. But as you come down, and I think this is something that's changed in recent years, it is really steep. It is no longer mud or anything. It is like gravel, but it's volcanic gravel. And so it's these little pieces of like marbles. And as you take each step, you are literally sliding. And I, along with a number of others, sort of took a diagonal approach to going down. I had taken my wife's hiking poles, which were really helpful. There were two teenage boys that thought this was great, and it was almost like they were snowboarding down, and good on them. But they also made it dangerous for some others. And so we finally made it down to the bottom. Not to the bottom. We finally made it down off that really steep slope where there were, if you got too close to the edge, you'd probably fall over, fall off, and that would not be good. So we stopped. We had lunch at the Emerald Lakes. We admired these lakes. Beautiful colours. The weather turned cold. I remember putting on about 3 layers of merino, putting on my jacket. I had taken some trousers, I didn't put those on, but Keisha put on her leggings and her gloves. But we were looking up at the track, and you can see the people coming down. And where the arrow is, a massive boulder suddenly dislodged and went down that gap and went down at speed and just started even bouncing. And it is a long way. And in the moment, I thought, man, I'm glad that wasn't me. There'd be no hope for you. Moments later, there was all of this shouting from the track. And a hiker had slipped off. And where the arrow is, they were clinging on to that rock. I think that person had probably dislodged that boulder. And they were holding on for dear life. And their feet couldn't get any traction. And people were yelling. Now, I had a video, and I showed somebody this video, and they said, don't show that video. It was quite harrowing. And people managed to go to where you can see 3 people on a ledge. That's as close as they could get. There was no way anyone could get to that person without putting their own life in huge danger. And I was thinking at the time, how on earth is that person going to get out of there? And I thought, in my untrained rescue mind, there'd be only 2 ways. One would be a rope rescue, somebody rappelling down and taking the person, or it would be by helicopter. And to cut a long story short, a helicopter eventually did come. But you know, it's a sobering reminder. Not just on a hike like this, but in life, one slip can change everything. And so I was thinking, what is the life application for that? And man, there could be a lot of life applications for that, couldn't there? But I think one obvious one is in life. We all experience slips. We all experience setbacks, struggles, moments when our footing disappear beneath us. Now, those who have either journeyed, or who have either been through recovery or supported people through recovery, will know how recovery is so fragile. The process can be so fragile. Sometimes it can be two steps forward, one step back. But I guess if I'm honest, and if you're honest, even seasoned followers of Jesus struggle. But there's a scripture, and it says this: two are better than one. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. And so hikers, they often have buddies. When I go out fishing in the boat, I prefer to take somebody with me. If something happens, there's somebody who can actually help out and get the both of us home. In a recovery from addiction, people have sponsors. They have somebody that they can call upon who's not going to judge, but they're going to be there to listen, to encourage. And so what about you and I? You know, do we have somebody who actually knows us well, who will actually be honest with us, who will help us up when we stumble? Do we have a person like that? Let's turn it around the other way. Are we a person who is helping somebody else? Who is that person? Who is that person that we are helping along life's journey? You see, Jesus never meant life to be a solo journey. He never meant for it to be a solo climb. He meant for us to do life with others in community. And so as the music team come up, these Tongariro Crossing reminded me that preparation matters. Presence matters and companionship matters. And that's not just when we do the crossing, that's in life. And so as we hear from the team here, I've got three questions for you, and it's going to be on the slide. Four questions, I can't count. And as they sing, I want us to be asking ourselves, how am I preparing myself for the days ahead? How am I preparing spiritually? How am I preparing physically? How am I preparing emotionally and relationally? Because they are all interconnected. And as one of those things falls behind, it affects the others. So how am I preparing myself? How am I looking after myself? And the second one, am I so focused on actually getting to heaven, making sure that I'm good enough? Instead of relying on the journey and the grace of God, and because of that focus, missing out what actually God is doing in us, for us, with us, and those around us. And who is walking with me? Who's helping me? Do I need to reach out to someone and say, hey, would you journey with me? Would you be honest with me? would you be there for me? Someone I can pick up the phone and say, hey, I want to have a coffee with you. I just want to share. And who are we doing that for? I think even the newest followers of Jesus have the ability to come alongside somebody else and help them along that journey. Who is God inviting you to walk alongside? Let's listen to the team and meditate on those questions.